Hey everyone, Attorney Jerry Bosch here with Bosch Law Firm and WorkCompExperts.com. For almost 30 years, we've represented Minnesotans just like you all over the great state of Minnesota to guarantee they've been treated fairly and with respect when they've suffered a work-related injury. A work injury can change your life in an instant. You need someone on your side who can help you focus on getting back on your feet and getting paid while you do. You may be entitled to medical benefits, wage loss benefits, job placement, retraining, and payment for permanent disability. To make sure you are being paid all the work comp benefits you're entitled to, please call the attorneys at Bosch Law Firm. The call is always free, and there's never a fee unless we recover benefits on your behalf. Call 651-333-8300, Bosch Law Firm, or visit us at WorkCompExperts.com.
Welcome back to Worst Seats in the House. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPantic, coming to you from my palatial, spacious,
yeah.
Very nice suite. I think it's because Bill Guerin's not on the road trip that I got the GM suite this trip.
You think so?
Yeah. Because there's only so many suites in a hotel, and usually the GM, the coach, gets suites. You know Whitey gets a suite, Andrew Hite.
What I can say for certain is that the TV play-by-play guy does not get one.
Well, the guy that has been traveling for a long, long time gets these nice upgrades every now and then, especially when the GM is not here. I was talking to Bruce Boudreaux's wife, Crystal, the other day, and they're staying at the JW in Vancouver for a week before they're going into a corporate housing. And I'm like, so did you get a big suite at JW? Because you know how nice that hotel is in Vancouver, Anthony.
Yes.
And she's like, well, actually, they're moving us tomorrow because the LA Kings are here. So Rob Blake and Todd McClellan had the suites there that they would normally get. So they're moving apparently today into a big suite at the JW. But they just had a regular, the coach of the Canucks had just a regular lowly hotel room the other day.
Yeah. Well, the JW Marriott there is where we just moved.
Yeah.
This last time we were in Vancouver, we used to always stay at the Fairmont Pacific Rim down on the water, which was my favorite hotel on the circuit. But we just moved down to be closer to the rink, and so it wouldn't surprise me that that's where those guys would want to stay, to be a block away from the arena.
Canucks fans yesterday like went back and like found all these old Bruce Boudreaux stories and quotes, and one of the funniest ones was the time in 2018 when the fire alarm went off at the team hotel there. There were two people that didn't evacuate at night. One was you, apparently, and the other was Bruce Boudreaux. And the quote from Bruce was hilarious. He's like, well, I didn't smell smoke, so why go down 15 flights of stairs?
Well, and that's true. I remember him saying that the next morning. I slept through the alarm and never heard it. And when everybody in the morning got up and were talking about being out on the sidewalk at 2:30 a.m. or whatever time it was, there were a bunch of people who were like, well, you obviously had gone out someplace and you weren't in your room. I was like, I walked back with you guys from dinner and cocktails. And I just slept through it. And Mike Greenlay was on the trip. He and Kevin Gorg had rooms like on the same floor as me, same hallway. They're like, that thing is right outside the door. There is nobody could sleep through that. And I said, I'm telling you guys, I didn't wake up. And so then they were, I said, maybe I should be worried that all you guys are out on the sidewalk and nobody looks around and says, hey, LaPanta's still inside. Maybe we ought to see if we can go get him.
Just let him burn.
Yeah.
That was Gorg's way of trying to become the play-by-play guy.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that's what he was
doing.
That's
funny, actually, because one of the Wild fans asked if you had if the Cork incident did wind up being traumatizing, major. Or I even brought up to you yesterday, like, say in New Jersey a couple weeks ago when the Wild showed up late because their bus was hit the traffic jam, went to the Holland Tunnel. Well, what if it was the opposite? The Wild showed up on time, but it was the media bus that showed up late. Like, what would a Bally Sports North do if all of a sudden Anthony LaPanta is not ready to do a game?
Well, that's an interesting way to phrase it. But I think it would be different in those two spots. I mean, if we had gotten to the rink that late, I mean, they're not going to hold the game for the TV crew. So if we get there at 6:30, we just sprint upstairs and jump in and do the game. They'd have had to do the pregame show without us. If we got there, let's say we got there at 7:10. Well, I mean, they aren't going to hold it for the media relations guy either.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, the game's going to start. I guess they would have, and because the radio guys were also on the bus, they probably would have made some deal with New Jersey to grab their feed and
yeah,
because our TV production crew had been there all day. So they would have been able to get a video feed on. So maybe they would have just borrowed the New Jersey play-by-play call, thrown that on. The Tampa one's a little more interesting because we obviously would have been there, and Gigi Marvin, who was my partner that night in the booth, would have been there. So they probably would have thrown Kevin Gorg up there at that point. I mean, the other option, let's say
Dan
we didn't
Myers.
Have, not Dan Myers, but they probably would have, they could take the radio feed put the radio feed on the TV broadcast. That's another option. But because they had an analyst there, my guess would be they would have thrown somebody else in the booth to do play-by-play. Which, I mean, Kevin has been in a similar spot before. I was on my way to a Twins pregame show one time. I was leaving football practice at Totino Grace and driving down to do a Twins pregame show, and I got rear-ended on the freeway. So King of the Clowns, our friend Peter Anderson, was the producer, and I texted him. I said, hey, I just got rear-ended on the freeway. It's like, I don't know, 4 in the afternoon. The pregame show's at 6:30. And I said, you know, I have no idea how long this is going to take. I can't drive my car. It has to get towed. So I'm going to see if I can get somebody to come and pick me up here, but I don't know like what this process is going to be. So just, I'll keep you posted. Yep, no problem. Well, at about 5:15, 5:30, the tow truck finally arrives to tow me away, and I had made arrangements to have a rental car meet me at the garage and everything. But I texted him. I said, hey, look, it's 5:30 now. I'm on the freeway. It's rush hour traffic. I have no idea if I'm going to get there. So Gorgie was the sideline guy that day. And I said, just have Gorg ready to host the pregame show just in case. Well, you know the way Gorg prepares for this stuff compared to the way that I prepare for it. I mean, I've done my homework like in the morning and I've sent out the notes and everything, but I've been known to just kind of skim over the format in the minutes or two leading up to the show.
Yeah. To interrupt about 30 seconds before I go on with Anthony, he'll do this to me in LA in a couple of days when I'm on TV with him. About 30 seconds before every time he'll look at me and he'll be like, what are we talking about? Like he had, and then I'm like, and I'll give him the three topics and he just somehow remembers them.
Well, yes, that's true. And I'll just go back to my story for a moment. And so Gorgie goes up to the desk and he's got his calligraphy. He carries around this baggie of like 27 markers of different colors. He looks like a second grader in Gianni's classroom or something.
100%.
And so he's got all these notes written down. And well, I showed up I walked to the desk at 6:25 and the show was at 6:30 and I walked up and Gorgie's sitting there and he's all flustered and he's worried about what are we? And I said, Gorgie, get the hell out of my chair. And if you don't mind, just leave the format there. So I have something to follow along with. And to this day, Gorgie's like, you know, it just pissed me off. Cause I go up there, I do all this work. And then he shows up 35 seconds before he goes on the air and he's fine.
And didn't you like leave your rental car? Like basically on the curb in front of Target Field?
No, I parked it in the ramp. I had to leave my car on the curb in front of Target Center one time for a Wolves game.
That's the story.
And I had one of our crew guys came out to park it for me because it was during I got caught in the Holly Dazzle parade. And so then I got to I was like, look, I don't know what I can do, guys. I'm four blocks away, but I can't get there. And so I parked on the sidewalk and ran in. I got to the desk maybe 15 minutes before the show that night, but they had one of our crew guys go park my car for me, which is a side note. He parked right across from the bus depot and left my doors unlocked. My car I got all my stuff stolen out of my car.
Oh my goodness.
Night. So after the game, I'm walking down the street and I see the passenger door ajar. I was like, well, this can't be a good thing.
Yeah.
And had some, it was Christmas time. I had some Christmas gifts stolen and my wallet was in there and it got stolen.
Oh,
so it was a disappointing night.
Yeah. Not very bright.
No.
So we're here in Edmonton and we're going to talk about the Wild. They've won six in a row going into tonight's game against Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and the Oilers, who have lost a couple in a row, including a bad home loss the other night to the LA Kings. So you know they're going to be surly tonight. But I do want to talk to you about an eventful day yesterday for former Wild coaches. And by the way, You know, thanks to our sponsors as well, but Elsie's and Tuttle's have been just awesome places to do live shows. We're going to be planning to do two a month pretty much for the foreseeable future. The next live show is December 15th at 7 p.m. at Elsie's. The show after that, which will be a blast, is December 30th at Tuttle's at 7 p.m. That'll be 2 days before the Winter Classic, so hopefully we'll get some guests out there. I think Jeremy Rutherford, the Athletic beat writer for Athletic St. Louis, will be there as well. Just outstanding blues writer. In fact, him and I went through the process of being recruited by the Athletic at the same time, and I think we're the sixth and seventh hockey writers to be hired. He and I went through the stress together, and here we are four and a half years later, and everything's going awesome. So definitely come out to Elsie's December 15th, 7 p.m. It'll be absolutely a blast. You can bowl there, you can eat drinks and talk wild, and we'll have a microphone there for you to ask questions as well. So an eventful day the last couple of days. Sunday night, the news breaks. Elliot Friedman from Sportsnet broke the story that Bruce Boudreau was the next coach of the Vancouver Canucks. And the next morning, we find out that Alain Vigneault has been fired by the Philadelphia Flyers, and Chuck Fletcher and Mike Yeo. Mike Yeo was the assistant coach reunited there in Philly, that took a screen capture as I was barreling down the runway at MSP yesterday. I was watching the live press conference on my phone as we're going down the runway, and I took a screen capture of Fletcher and Yeo just sitting behind a Flyers backdrop. It just was so weird.
Could especially have just because superimposed the old Wild one.
It really,
for sure.
I mean, they look exactly the same, other than Mike now, I think, has LASIK, so he didn't have the glasses on. But I mean,
he had glasses on the bench last night.
Yeah. Did he?
Yeah.
I thought he, okay. All right. I didn't notice that. But anyway, you and I ran into him actually in Tampa a couple weeks
Maybe
ago.
Maybe I'm thinking of that wrong.
I didn't think that he did. But anyway, you know, we ran into him in Tampa the other day, coincidentally, two podcasts ago. The second we wrapped up.
Right after you almost got mugged.
Yeah, right. We almost got mugged. I might have had one too many bloodies. But Mike came over and gave us big hugs, and we talked about the team, and we talked about the major injuries that they've had this year with, obviously, Ryan Ellis, Kevin Hayes right off the hop, and people like that. Carter Hart's been better, but lately starting to get in the holes that he had last year. Wasn't very good two games ago. Martin Jones comes in last night, and I thought was absolutely atrocious. He looked like he was wearing a trampoline on his chest. They had a ton of chances last night, but they couldn't defend.
Well, couldn't defend, and I actually texted with Mike last night after the game, and I said, look, I mean, when Colorado gets it going, there aren't very many teams that can play at that level. They had it going last night, and then they had a ton of power play chances. So it's, you know, you start to put those guys, you know, they had a 5-on-3 goal. Yep. You put those guys on power play after power play, and the highly skilled guys they have get it rolling. And then you throw Martin Jones and his struggles in there. I mean, they needed saves last night. But anyway, to go back to what the real point of it all is it's a pretty cool day to see those guys both get back into the coaching world. And, you know, we spent so much time over the years with both of them. I learned a lot about the game and the everyday life in the NHL from Mike Yeo and the day-to-day routine of a coach and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, obviously we both had a number of colorful conversations with Bruce over the years. And I think when both of them left, for sure, Mike Yeo. Bruce, I wasn't quite as sure just because of the fact that where he was in his career. I didn't think there was any doubt Mike Yeo would be a head coach again somewhere else. And now this is, even though this one might be short term and it's only labeled as interim, you know, this one, I don't know, but he's had a couple. And Bruce, I didn't really know if he'd get another shot somewhere, but I think we've seen over the years with what he's done, he always injects some life immediately into a team, usually ignites their star players to be better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we saw it last night in his debut. Yep. And so we'll see. I think Bruce, you know, I don't know if leverage is the right word, but to make sure that it was the end of this year and next year to give himself a shot. Because if it's just the end of this year, the odds of Vancouver being any kind of a factor at the end of the year are slim.
Yeah.
But this way he's guaranteed to be there next year, and who knows? I mean, if you have some success, the best way to audition for a job is on the job.
Yeah.
And we'll see.
Bruce, I think that negotiation took about 25 seconds before he's like, yeah, send the plane. He just has badly wanted to get back in. And the one thing about Bruce Boudreau is I do think the last couple weeks he started to really eyeball the Canucks and the Flyers, started watching them more just in case he got that phone call because he didn't want to cram. So I think he, you know, it's funny. When I got the job to go to Minnesota with the Star Tribune, I arrived 3 days before training camp, and if I had to pick like one team that I knew the least about in the National Hockey League, it would have been the Wild. And I remember sitting on this American Airlines flight up to, I don't know why they put me on American, up to Minnesota, and I was basically on NHL.com like, okay, who the hell is Todd White? You know, who the hell is, I've never even heard
Wes
of
Walls?
Yeah. Alex Henry. I'm like, who the hell is Alex Henry? And then he turns out to be the first captain of that season, right? Mark Chouinard. I had no clue who these guys were. And so, but the one, that's
a lot of
the
people
one
listening to this podcast still don't know who they
exactly.
are.
Yeah, exactly. Mark Chouinard is my first ever game covering the Wild, got a hat trick. How about that? Mark Chouinard. Anyway, so Bruce, though, I think really just wanted to make sure that if he got that call, because I've always told him, like, you're going to be first out of the bullpen. Like, a team that's desperate is going to want somebody like
you.
They
want a veteran coach to come in, and they're not ready to give up on the season yet.
No doubt.
And this is so early in the year. I mean,
and we were in Jersey last week, right? Week and a half ago. And I'm like, you need to start watching that team. And he absolutely did. And so I think also when he first had that conversation with their owner, I think the owner was really delighted of just how much Bruce knew about that team. Although the vintage Bruce last night, he did a 9-minute press conference, and the guy that scored the first goal of the season for them, he's like, what's the guy's name? Like, he had no clue of the guy's name.
Yeah.
And regardless, there's no chance he would have been able to pronounce it. So, but it was just, you know, this is like one of those things. I think that he's going to go there and he's going to do what he does. He's going to lighten that mood. And, you know, we know that X's and O's might not be his biggest strength and things like that, but he's going to go there with this, in a lot of ways, simple demeanor in there, calm things down. There's going to be stressful things. Last night was obviously a natural excitement for a new coach, so that 4-0 shutout doesn't mean all is fixed by any stretch. But I do think that he's going to go there and do what he did in Anaheim and Washington, which was immediately jolt those teams.
Well, and in both cases, they had star players, and Vancouver has star players. Yeah. They have star players who have been dramatically underachieving this year.
That's right.
Exactly. And those are the kind of guys he always tends to have a positive impact, because it's, and at least at the start, it's usually just be a hockey player, and leave it at that. And sometimes that's all it takes to get those guys going. And, you know, so it's, we'll see how long it lasts. But you know, the big thing with, I think, both of these cases is that you've got teams that are, that both had expectations to be relevant, and both have struggled mightily, but neither are in a position yet where you would say all is lost. I mean, when you really think about it, I mean, you know, Philadelphia is what, on a 9-game losing streak, but they're 8 or 9 points out. I mean, there's still enough time. It's tough, but there's still enough time.
Yeah, especially in it's tough for, I think, for them in that division, where I think there are so many. Don't you agree, Anthony, that there have been a lot of underwhelming, unimpressive teams in the West?
And well, I think that without a doubt.
Yeah.
But I also think there have been in the Metro. I mean, the Islanders, they might be the single biggest disappointment in the entire league. I think Columbus has been, you know, I guess they're about a 500 club, and that's about where you'd expect them to be. New Jersey, I think some thought would take a step this year, and they're about a 500 club. I mean, NHL 500, they've lost 15 out of 25 games. But and you know, so I mean, if you look at Philadelphia and you say, all right, well, you're 8-11-4, I think, or 8-11-5, and I mean, that's not insurmountable.
Yeah.
It's not like he's taken over a team that's 5-18. And Vancouver, you know, in the same spot, when you look at the Pacific Division, I mean, who's a lock?
Yeah.
Calgary and Edmonton?
Yeah.
Vegas?
Yeah.
And then after that, they're as good as any of those other teams.
Yeah.
And within striking distance of any of those other teams.
A couple years ago, didn't they go? They basically went to the, they lost to Dallas in the conference final in the bubble, right? Didn't they?
The second.
It was the year they beat the Wild. Yeah.
Third round. But it was the final.
Oh, yeah, because they won the qualifying round.
And then the
quarterfinals. Five rounds that year.
Right.
Here's a funny story about Bruce Boudreau. So the owner and him are flying back with his wife. to Vancouver from Hershey, Pennsylvania last week and or the other day, Sunday. And the owner's, you know, basically asking him, like, you know, all right, like, help me prep for this press conference. And he basically said, like, what should I say when the media say to me, like, are you doing this to make the playoffs, to save the season? Should I just say we're going to evaluate the next 10 games? And Bruce is like, no. Tell him we're making the playoffs. He goes, I'm here to win. I didn't take this job not to win. So, like, he goes, I'll tell you right now, I'm going to go behind those microphones and say, I'm here to make the playoffs. And you know that's the way that Bruce operates. I remember his first press conference in Minnesota when I asked him his expectations for that year, and he said to win the division. I laughed out loud, and he was like, that was before he really knew me. He was like, what are you laughing at?
Well, and remember,
like, in hindsight, it was like so insulting the way that I laughed.
Yeah, but
just,
remember when
we've never had those expectations. No, in Minnesota.
And to be fair, he came as close to achieving that as anybody recently. And when you look at the, you know, this, they've been in this spot. We've talked about this so many times over the with the Wild over the 8 playoff appearances in 9-year stretch. And some of the teams that were in their division, I mean, you're in a division with Chicago, who had won a couple cups in a 3-year span. And then with a Dallas club that was loaded with stars, and a Colorado club that was loaded with stars, and a Winnipeg club that was loaded with stars. They never had on paper the best club, and yet he had them in contention with those Chicago teams in those early years. But I remember when he took the job in Washington, and he had told the story about that he came up from their American Hockey League team, and he originally was like, you know, an interim coach, and I don't want to rock the boat too much. And he said, I had one meeting. I walked back to my office and said, you know what? Screw this. This is my one chance. This might be my only chance to be an NHL coach. I'm going to do this my way and try to win. And he went back. He said, I walked back in. We redid the meeting and said, nope, we're doing this. And, you know, now, I mean, as we talked about just a couple moments ago, in both Washington and Anaheim, he had elite players, like some of the best in the league at the time.
Yeah.
You know, in Anaheim, it was Getzlaff in his prime. And in Washington, it was Ovechkin and Backstrom in their prime. And, you know, now he's got Elias Pettersson, who's been underachieving, but you've got Quinn Hughes, you've got, you know, JT Miller, Brock Besser. You've got some top-end offensive players.
Yeah, no doubt. Real quick on Philly, and I do want to tell people about our sponsors, but I will be, I was texting with Yo yesterday, and I know that Mike wants to, you know, he really never wanted to get another shot in this manner. He was really respected AV, but he wants to really take advantage of this. My biggest question is, will he be afforded the opportunity to take advantage of this? You know, Rick Tocchet, former Flyer, Broad Street Bullies type demeanor. And coincidentally, I was texting before this news broke yesterday, or right as this news broke yesterday, I was texting with Tocchet to set up a podcast for later this month when TNT is in town for the Winter Classic. And another special guest that's going to also be joining the podcast. And so we're texting back and forth. And finally, I said to him, like, if you're going to be in town, you know, you might not even be employed by TNT anymore, because he does have an out in his contract to leave, just like Bruce Boudreau had to leave NHL Network. He's got an out to leave for a coaching job with TNT. Do you think that makes sense for the Flyers, just based on he is a Flyer, man, you know, like Rick Tocchet?
Yeah,
he's worked with, he was in Philly when Mike Yeo was there, I believe, right? I think they were together in Philly.
I don't know that for sure.
But I've got to think that, you know, you could immediately, if you're Chuck Fletcher, put Yeo right next to him back again in his old role.
Well, there's two things that jump to my mind is that, number one, I think Mike Yeo and Rick Tocchet would probably mesh well together. Mm-hmm. Number two, Rick Tocchet was the one guy out of all the potential coaches out there this offseason that surprised me the most that he didn't land someplace.
Yeah.
And
he talked to Seattle. He talked to Rangers, I believe.
And I was surprised he was kind of the last guy left without a, I shouldn't say the last guy, but he was a guy left without a chair when all the coaching jobs were divvied up. And I'd be surprised if he's not back in the league soon. I don't know I have no idea what they're thinking there, but I know that we've already seen some of the rumors. You've also seen some of the other, I mean, and it's funny because when you're in Canada, as we are right now, the rumor mill in the NHL is stirred up here like NFL football is in the United States, or Major League Baseball during the spring training and the winter meet, whatever, during the trade and free agency series season. I mean, it is crazy how you've got these guys that, I mean, this is life up here. So it's been kind of interesting to be, to just see it, and it's nonstop. On the every TV channel's got their insider guy giving his opinion that, you know, my people tell me that the Flyers haven't talked to anybody. My people tell me the Flyers have already had conversations. Yeah. I mean, it's who knows? And, you know, I'm not in that business. I know you are. So I just sit back and laugh about it. You're probably the same guy sending all the text messages trying to figure out, hey, what are they doing? Who are they talking to? So
I'll be honest, you know, and like, with Tockett, if the Wild didn't get off to a good start this year, and with Dean being in the last year of his deal, my radar was up on him because Guerin and him are really tight. And so, and by the way, Mikey Owen and Rick Tockett didn't even come close to coinciding with each other in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I was wondering where you were.
I don't know.
When you said it, I was like, am I remembering this?
Maybe I'm just thinking that Phil Kessel always wanted to be with Rick Tockett in Arizona. So I just like had that tied together with Mike Yo, because he was in Pittsburgh, you know, exactly. Hey, thanks to Bosch Law Firm for always being an incredibly loyal sponsor. And Anthony, tell us about Kowalski's.
So I got an email from Jerry Bosch the other day.
Nice.
He was watching the Wild out in Vegas, and it was the night the Wild beat the Maple Leafs, and he said, hey, sitting in a sports book in Las Vegas, they've got the game on, and your call on. He said, it's a pretty exciting finish, so, you know, appreciate that. But for me, the holiday season always is all about great meals, and boy, we've had some great ones lately, and just had a terrific Akiushi strip dinner the other night before we left on this 8-game road trip. And it's funny how we plan our whole weeks around now what we're going to do for Sunday dinner. So it's, all right, are we having Sunday dinner? Yes. Okay, that means no steak on Thursday or Friday when we go out for dinner and anything. And so in this case, had a tremendous Akiushi steak dinner. And boy, I was wandering through their produce area and just started, you know, everything's fresh, everything looks great. And I just started picking things that I thought would end up being in a new kind of a fresh tasting salad. And boy, was it, we ended up with a beet, apple, walnut, celery, and red pepper salad. It was terrific. And, you know, it's just another example of when you go through there, you can count on everything. So, you know, you never grab something and you get home and cut it open and realize, like, oh boy, that pepper's a little shady. If you're going to have great company here over the holidays and going to have great meals, you better make sure you start with the best ingredients. And for that, I always stop at Kowalski's.
Well, folks, it's that time of year again. The holiday season is here. We know that sometimes that can put a lot of stress on a lot of people. Well, make sure you and your family are staying warm, cozy, and stress-free this holiday season. My friends over at Aquarius Home Services are offering a furnace tune-up holiday special for just $55. That's right. For only $55, Aquarius will come to your home and provide a thorough 21-point inspection of your home's furnace, giving you one less thing to worry about over the holidays. In fact, when I get back from this cold trip from Edmonton, I got actually somebody coming over to my house to do my furnace tune-up for the winter. Well, my advice, contact Aquarius Home Services also. Do that today and schedule your furnace tune-up. They're just a click away at AquariusHomeServices.com, and don't forget to mention Russo sent you. The more things change, the more things change. And when it comes to real estate, two things are changing big time as we head into the winter: the housing market and consumer expectations. When it comes to the market, Christendahl Real Estate is seeing more homes for sale, but they're not selling as fast. And experts are seeing higher interest rates on the horizon. As for consumers, it's convenience, convenience, convenience. We all want to save time with an order, really with one click of the button. That's why Christendahl Real Estate created its hugely successful Guaranteed Offer Program. They have motivated buyers because everybody knows their name. In fact, every time they market themselves, they're actually helping you sell your home, which is why they feel 100% confident guaranteeing offers. Thousands of people have received guaranteed offers from Chris Lindahl Real Estate because it's the most convenient way to sell, period. More flexibility, more options, more access to homes to buy. So don't wait. Whether you want to sell conventionally or go the guaranteed offer route, call Chris Lindahl Real Estate today at 763-401-SOLD or go to chrislindahl.com. That's chrislindahl.com. So again, what is it? December 15th, 7 p.m. Elsie's. Definitely come on out. It'll be a grand old time. We'll get talking Minnesota Wild. Maybe we'll figure out exactly what's going on in Philly and things like that. Let's talk about this Wild team, Anthony. Six games in a row. Just like I was saying last week, Jordan Greenway having an immensely great season. Isn't that what I said last
exactly.
week?
Exactly. It was pretty close to that, yeah, I think. Exactly. It was. In fact, I think there was some ridicule and eye-rolling involved when I said, hey, I'm telling you, his game's been great, and the scoring is just a matter of time. If he keeps playing the way he's playing, it doesn't matter if he scores. So you were spot on with your analysis that, you know, we ought to take him out back and, you know, just leave him in the dumpster because he only had 3 points in 20 games.
Yeah. Look, he had a great week, but it doesn't change the fact. It's like all of a sudden, you know, Kaprizov's absolutely on fire, and now, like, people are coming up like, oh, is he still struggling? Like, it doesn't change the fact that he was. I mean, when Kirill Kaprizov himself is saying that he's disappointed, like, just be, it's not, doesn't mean that you're going to forever be a disappointment.
No,
so,
but
to your point, though, on Greenway, that I totally did agree with, is that Greenway has done his job for the last month. My point was that he's just not producing.
Not producing, yeah. But this is, and if you remember, what I said is, well, you look, when we're at the end of the season, we'll be talking about a guy with somewhere probably eight to 10 goals, 25 to 28 to 30 assists, and a guy that is, if he keeps playing the way he's playing, integral to this team's success. And the way that line has played,
yeah.
We're going to have a graphic on it tonight, that over the last six games, they have been so good. And the I think their expected goals for percentage is just a shade under 60. And it's an imperfect stat, but it's the most accurate stat we have at this point in all of the analytic world. The expected goals for stat is the most accurate analytic stat that anybody has. And it's done. Now they've got years of data. So they can, every single shot attempt that takes place, they know that over the last 10 years from that spot, 21% of those have resulted in a goal. So that's a 0.21 shot attempt for that mm-hmm. guy. And maybe this one's a 4% chance, so that's a 0.04. And it all gets added up, and it's the most accurate analytics stat we have today. And that line is at about almost 60% over the last six games. The only spot that stat is not always 100% accurate is it doesn't take into account who's on the ice for the other side. Maybe we'll get to that at some point. But we know by watching it, they're on the ice against the other team's best that entire homestand. That's yeah. five of these six games, that almost every shift was against the big guns from Tampa, the big guns from Winnipeg, the top scoring line from New Jersey, and the big guns from Toronto. I mean, these guys spent almost an entire homestand playing against the best and still had a 60% expected goals for percentage. Yeah. I mean, it is, and when they do that, that's why the Kaprizov line looks brilliant, because they don't have to waste any time playing against the other team's best. And these guys are changing the momentum in games, and they're bringing the crowd into it, all the little intangibles that you can't yes. necessarily quantify. But the tangible things, the statistics say that they are as big a reason as any for the fact that this team won all five games on the homestand.
Yeah. I was talking to a GM the other day that was just going on and on to me about Foligno and his impact on this team. And it really does feel like, and obviously Eric Snack is the straw that stirs that line. And the one thing is that Foligno and Greenway were actually playing together for a large part of the early going season. And the biggest difference right now is Eriksson Ek back on that line. But what do you think that it is that makes Greenway feel so at home with those two? Because look, I mean, you know, say what you want. I mean, I don't disagree that he's been playing really well now for 3 or 4 weeks, but he was not, there were loafing moments around the ice. There was not this engagement, this physical engagement that we're seeing. But even the other night on the defensive side of the puck, on the PK, like I thought Dean Evason made a great point in the postgame that I kept on saying to Dane Mizutani during the first period of that game. Look at Greenway's stick. Like his stick that night was just, yeah. It was almost comical how many times he ruined a scoring opportunity for the Leafs.
He's got such physical tools
yeah.
that way. And so I think early in the year when he wasn't playing with those guys, it's harder to find that identity when you're playing with two players who don't play the game the same mm-hmm. way. So it's hard, I think, not necessarily for everybody, but for him to go be a physical force in the corners when your two line mates are smaller, faster, more skilled guys perhaps. And once he started playing the game the right way, Dean immediately threw him back on the line with Eriksson, Ek, and Foligno. And, yeah, I mean, look, let's go back to the start of the season and when we talked about the potential Wild lineup, and I've said from the beginning, it doesn't make any sense to me why you don't put those three guys together. And I know they wanted to start the season with Eriksson, Ek in a different spot. To me, that never was likely to work. I felt like you had to have these three guys together and just let them be who they are. Go play the game this way. Go be horses. Go be a momentum-changing line. Just go, you know, hit the hell out of everybody on every shift and whatever. And so now when Greenway starts playing that way, now you get on that line, and Foligno's energy is magnetic. So how do you not play with joy when you watch the way Foligno plays with joy? The Greenway scores his first goal. The puck, you know, hit him in the hip and deflects in, and Foligno celebrated like he had just won the cup. And, you know, so then it seeps through the group. And when you got two other guys who are doing the same thing, you watch those two guys go in the corner and pound some guy and create a loose puck. Well, the next time it goes in the corner, you want to be the guy that delivers the big hit that separates somebody from the puck. And so I think that's what it really is. And then you do have to be rewarded with some success. So you can keep playing that way, but very few guys are wired where they just keep playing that way no matter what happens on the score sheet. It's hard to do that. When these guys start to get rewarded, then all of a sudden it's a snowball. Like, hey, we keep playing this way, and look what happens. You got a goal, and I got a goal. And now the next night, we go out and do this again, and this guy just took two penalties out of frustration. And, you know, so you start to see some of that stuff, and I think that's why Greenway is able to play the way he's played when he's playing with those guys.
I don't know if you heard my question to Dean Evason the post game the other night, but I asked him point blank, did you always figure that you were going to go back to that grief line? And he grinned like a Cheshire cat. He basically admitted, like, yeah, we started with Eriksson Ek between Kaprizov and Zuccarello, but we always knew that was in our back pocket and was going to eventually happen. And obviously having Ryan Hartman playing as well right now is what allowed that to get back to that. Although the change was made before, I think, Ryan started really picking up his game or even playing with that line consistent, because wasn't Goudreau there for a bit? And
yeah, they tried some different guys there.
But, I mean,
and I
you
also
just
think
knew
in the
that
back of their mind, they were thinking it might be a younger player too if it didn't work, where maybe it's, all right, if things are going the way we think they might go and we need more skill there, we might look to one of our young stars, young up-and-coming guys, and say, all right, let's see what you got.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So Mason Shaw gets the call-up right now to get a 13 forward on this trip. Unfortunately, Matt Boldy gets hurt in Iowa the other night. That potentially could have been his call-up right there. But Mason gets a really dreamy call-up here. A guy with three torn ACLs in his career comes up to Alberta, where he's from. He's a farmer 2.5 hours south of here during the offseason. So it's pretty exciting. Probably not playing tonight, I would assume. You know, do you know yet the lineup? We'll find out here in an hour.
But I would guess it's the same lineup.
Yeah, that rat. I mean, I don't think you're pulling Bukestad out, and I don't think that they're pulling Rask out right now. So Mason's probably not playing, so he'll get to spend time with his family tonight in the in the stand, so which is kind of neat. Unfortunately, Spurgeon doesn't come back tonight, so that's a tough. You'd love him to be in a game like this,
no doubt.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're going McDavid and Dreisel have the ability to make any defenseman look stupid, but man, when you you have a guy like Spurgeon in the lineup, it probably diminishes that.
Well, especially when you're on the road,
yeah,
because then you've got a couple defensive pairs that you can feel like, all right, if we end up with whatever the forward group is, but if we at least make sure that we've got Spurgeon and Goligoski or Brodin and Dumba on the ice when we're going to see those guys, it's going to be tough. I mean, it's going to be a challenge. And I think that's what makes what Minnesota was able to do on the homestand even that much more impressive, that, you know, you kind of overlook the fact that they're doing all that really with two guys that were a part of their defensive core last year. Two out of six that were a part of their defensive core last year for that whole five-game homestand. And yet defended really well against, you know, some of the most explosive offensive talents in the NHL. So I think that's going to be a challenge. I think right now I can't imagine you change the forward lineup when you're on a winning streak like this. Dean has shown earlier this season that he's unlikely to change when things are going the way they're going. And I got to say, I mean, again, going back to, I talked analytics earlier with the expected goals for percentage, the Wild's second best forward line against Toronto was Rask, Pitlick, and Fiala. Their best line the game before was Rask, Pitlick, and Fiala. I mean, they're generating a ton of chances, most of them by Kevin Fiala, but they're generating chances and not giving much up. So Now they're not doing it against the other team's most rigorous competition, and that might be where Edmonton tries to exploit Minnesota tonight, is with last change, they might try to make those guys play defense because, you know, that's not the strength of their game. We'll have to see. But I don't, there's no way he changes the lineup.
I annihilated Kaprizov on this podcast about a month ago, and he's now erupted. Last week, Greener, he's erupted. Now let's do it to Fiala. let's get him going.
Fiala has no chance to score in the NHL.
Absolutely
none.
This has been like a, you know, not only all season this year, but pretty much in the playoffs last year. This is getting a little concerning.
Well,
though.
Actually, I'm absolutely not at all concerned in here. Here's why. I'll go back to the analytics stat. There are 806 players in the NHL that are evaluated on this expected goals for percentage. Kevin Fiala is number 806 in terms of the expected goals and the actual goals differential.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He's
what's it now? It's like 39. It's like 39 right straight attempts that he hasn't scored, right?
It was 34 going into the last game. So, somewhere in that neighborhood. Yeah. He has more shots on goal in the last six games without a goal than any player in the league. And you just can't create that many chances for that long without them going in, especially when you shoot the puck the way he shoots the puck. And if you look at some of the stops that goalies have made on him lately, I mean, like off the shoulder cap, you know, another one hit a goalie in the back of the arm when he was kind of flailing his arm the other way. If he wasn't creating chances, I'd have concern. But right now, he is literally number 806 out of 806 in terms of the differential between his expected goals and his actual goals. And I just don't think that can continue. So if I don't have a concern with Fiala because of that. He's proven he can score in the past. You know, it'd be different if you were talking about a guy who had never scored more than eight goals in a season and say, well, how many years are we going to keep talking about creating chances and not finishing? This is a guy who has finished. And, you know, it might just be like it was for Kaprizov. One goes in, and all of a sudden the snowball starts going. If you remember the goal that got Kaprizov going, it wasn't like a highlight reel spinorama. It was just a deflection out front.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, he went on this tear with, what is it now, 18 points in seven games or 18 points in nine games. And that started with just a goofy, fluky goal. Maybe the same thing happens with Fiala.
Yeah. On Spurgeon coming back, I assume Ben comes out. But the one thing is, it'll be interesting to see here, Anthony, if just Ben's quality play the last, you know, seven or eight games since Spurgeon got hurt, if that'll now, you know, caused a little bit of a rotation where sometimes Merrill plays, sometimes Ben. I don't think you want him just sitting in the press box from now on. I think that you can make that move, you know, every now and then. Maybe, like, you have back-to-back games coming up, L.A., Vegas, maybe use
might
one
be
defenseman.
Those kind of spots,
exactly.
But at the same time, Dean's been really clear, like, look, we're going to play the guys that are playing.
Right.
And if he believes that Merrill and Kulikov are defensemen number five and six, I think he's going to play those guys. Maybe down the stretch, if all of a sudden you start to feel like, all right, we've got some veteran legs on the blue line here, might be nice to save a little wear and tear. If you remember, Tampa did that a few years ago. They had seven defensemen and they only played two every night. The others literally just went one, two, three, four, five. You knew you were going to be out once every five games.
Right.
And it paid dividends for them down the stretch into the playoffs. Yeah. And I want to talk to you a little bit about another of our great sponsors, and that's Tria Orthopedic. These guys can take care of you no matter what the situation is that with which you might be dealing. My family has used them and been a part of them. I've talked earlier episodes of the show about Dr. Joel Boyd, who put my knee back together after a fall on the ski slopes in Whistler, not too far, you know, just a little bit west of where we are right now. But you had I've seen Dr. Amundsen when I had a disc fragment on a nerve in my back. And we also went there when my son AJ had an injury during his high school baseball career. It turned out to be a torn UCL, the Tommy John ligament, and went and saw their doctors for that too. Got him back playing again and got him ready for a football season that, you know, ultimately wound up as a state champion quarterback. So they can get you back on the field. They can get you back to competition. Or if you're just somebody who wants to stay active and you've got an injury that you want to have dealt with and get yourself back to normal, Tree Orthopedic is the way to go.
For well more than a year, I've told you about my journey of Profile and how much weight I lost, how much better I feel about myself. Well, a lot of that is because of the incredible coaches that they have over at Profile. Well, you know, people are changing jobs right now faster than they change lanes on the highway, and experts say they're leaving because their current jobs are just not fulfilling their true mission. Well, if this sounds familiar and you have a passion for helping others like me, well, the good folks at Profile want to meet you. I can speak from experience because my Profile coach was the difference in my weight loss journey. Profile is an absolutely awesome place to work. They offer competitive compensation, benefits, a 401k match, flexible work schedules, and a sign-on bonus. If you're not a health coach already, well, don't worry. Profile pays for your training and health coach certification. So what are you waiting for? Visit profileplan.com/Twin Cities for a location near you, or find them on Indeed under Profile by Sanford. Profile, transforming lives, one relationship at a time. And here's a word from Minnesota Propane Association.
Hi, I'm Laura Shera. And did you know that a propane gas furnace lifespan averages 20 years, while electric heat pumps only last 14 years? And propane furnaces work in all temperatures while delivering warm and consistent heat to your home. Why buy two heating systems when one propane furnace can do it all? It lasts longer, works better, and it costs less. These things and more are done with propane today. The right energy right now.
Back here, final segment of War Seats in the House. Michael Russo, Anthony LaPanta coming from my gigantic suite here at the JW Marriott in Edmonton.
It just feels so, I'm just so honored to be invited to the gigantic suite.
I feel like this is the same suite I actually got last time I was here, which I absolutely love. How about the World Juniors are going to be here? We see all the elevators already have the signage on. We might see a bunch of Wild players here. Murat Huzandina for Russia, definitely. Maybe Pavel Novak for Czech Republic. Jesper Wallstedt for Sweden. And then the Wild actually have three Canadian defensemen at selection camp.
Yeah, which Carson that Lambos. I thought was the biggest surprise.
Yeah, so we don't know if they'll make it, but Lambos, Hunt, and O'Rourke. I was just talking to Judd Brackett for a story that I'll write later this week. It was actually supposed to run yesterday, but I wound up writing about Bruce Boudreau on my flight up here. So I'll probably write it on my flight to San Francisco tomorrow. But, you know, he really thinks that at least two or three of these guys might have a chance to make it. It's a really deep blue line. They might actually have all left shot defensemen on that team. But if the Wild even get one of those defensemen, it'll be the first time the Wild have a defenseman on the World Junior Canadian team since Matt Dumba, 8 or 9 years ago. Kalen Addison played, obviously, for the World Juniors as well, but he was a Pittsburgh Penguin at the time. So that'll be pretty exciting to see that here at the end of the month in both Red Deer and remember Bob's Country Bunker in Blues Brothers? There's some sort of bar called like Bob's or something. God, what's it called? I'll look this up in Red Deer. So years ago when we take the media bus, that's when I was allowed on the media bus. We take the media bus up Calgary to Edmonton. I'd go with the Panthers. And we would always stop in Red Deer because Randy Moeller is from Red Deer, Randy Moeller, Florida Panthers announcer. And we stopped there and he brings us to this like Country Bob's. I'll look it up in a second. And we go into this place, and it's exactly what, to me, Bob's Country Bunker was in Blues Brothers. Like it was like rawhide and like the stage like had almost like fencing on it. I walk in, they're playing like Devil Went Down to Georgia. There's like a bar fight. It was pretty awesome. So Red Deer that's the place to go.
It's literally the halfway point,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Between Edmonton and Calgary.
Yep.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. I mean, I love the World Junior Tournament. It's such a great level of hockey to watch. And up here in Canada, it is a huge tournament, and they take such tremendous pride in it. It's the kids who play
Billy
hockey
Bob's.
Up there.
Billy Bob's Saloon.
All right. Well, we'll mark that down if we ever decide to drive from
it's
one
right
city
off
to the other.
Highway.
But, yeah.
It's so cool.
But I'm really excited for the tourney, and it's been a couple of years since the Wild were well represented in that tournament period, let alone by Canada.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'll be fun to see some of their prospects. Yeah. It's just such a it's one of my favorite tournaments to watch.
That's really when Kaprizov first burst onto the scene for Wild fans, if you remember. It was in when they were in Toronto and Montreal, I believe, and he had 9 goals to lead Russia. He captained them. And that was the time that Brent Flair and Chuck Fletcher actually flew to meet with him, and they weren't allowed, so they essentially gave his Wild jersey, because they never met him, to his girlfriend and his agent at the time, to give to Kirill, but they still couldn't get in front of him. And then next thing you know, he re-signs in Russia there. So, you know, with his KHL team. So it'll be really fun. Let's get to some Twitter questions and then we'll wrap up the show. But when we were at Tuttle's the other day, we met a couple, really cool couple that are coming on our Europe trip next year. We have a bunch of people that are coming on our Europe trip. It's always a great time. If you are interested in going to Europe with Anthony and myself, go to DefineDestinations.com. It's an awesome trip, all expenses paid. We're going to Budapest, Prague, I think Bratislava, and Vienna. And then it's going to be really neat. I'm actually going to stick around there for a couple days. I'm actually going to go visit Marco Rossi's hometown.
Yeah, it's always a great trip. In fact, and the stories that we continue to tell, we just went to dinner with, or had dinner with a couple friends of ours, and they were asking about different ways that we were serving food at our house. And I said, yeah, well, we kind of picked this up when we went to, what was the first vineyard we went to in Tuscany?
Casanova.
Yep. And I said, we picked this up at Casanova, picked up a couple recipes from the vineyard's wife. And it was just, it's just an unbelievable trip. You'll have memories forever, and you'll get a chance to tell stories about life, family, hockey, baseball, whatever you want to chat about, and we'll have a great time.
And the best part of those trips are after the full, you know, I mean, again, Michael Kenny, who does an amazing job, I mean, incredible dinners and excursions and accommodations, like the hotels we're staying at are just look incredible. But the best part of the trip is just at night, us all hanging around together as a group, just with a glass of wine, just talking wild, talking about life, talking about broadcasting, journalism, and actually stuff that you guys like too, besides just me. It's a lot of Anthony and myself talking about ourselves, but we'd like to know about you too. So come on the trip. Let's go through some Twitter questions real quick, Anthony. I got 4 or 5 that I liked just to remind myself here. Bryce asks, with Greenway playing like the big rig, we know raising his trade value, does he get moved at the trade deadline or the offseason? I don't think you ever move him at the trade deadline right now. I mean, the one thing that this is a good reminder even for Billy Guerin is that if you want to go win a cup, you need that line together.
Yes.
You're going to have to – this team has to go through Eichel. This team has to go through McKinnon. If they want to go anywhere, they're going to have to go through those guys. You're going to need a line like that. And so moving Greenway –
that's exactly the discussion we had last week was that – or last show was that, look, this line is what defines this team. Mm-hmm. John Cooper talked about it after. He said that's the toughest line we've seen.
Yep.
And the Toronto media talked about it the same way. They said, holy cow, do those guys play a heavy game.
Yeah.
Heavy and fast. And, yeah. I mean, you
Minnesota is not Minnesota without that line. Name another line like that in the National Hockey League.
There isn't one.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Big, fast, and all tremendous defensive players.
And committed to what they're committed to how they're playing the game.
So I was talking to a GM. I was talking to somebody yesterday, and we started talking about the Hurricanes, and he pointed out that the Hurricanes play like Rod Brind'Amour played, and it got us to thinking that the Wild play like Billy Guerin plays. And so yesterday during my delay,
and Dean Evason, there's some guys who play like Dean too on this.
But it
roster.
Was absolutely. I mean, Dean Evason is Ryan Hartman, right?
Right.
But yesterday during my delay in Calgary, I just started watching actually Bill Guerin YouTube videos. And if you watch Bill Guerin on YouTube, that is the Minnesota Wild.
Well, it's Marcus Foligno.
Yeah, really.
I mean, not everybody's shaped like him.
Yeah,
but it's like watching Marcus Foligno with a little more skill.
Billy had a little more skill.
But he played the game the same way.
Yeah. But Marcus won't have 400 goals.
No. But he played the game the same way. He just happened to have more skill.
Absolutely. Tough as nails. It's fun. It really is amazing that Bill Guerin wound up the GM here, because I've for years said that, like, Roenick, Guerin, Tkachuk, that was my USA hockey team that I looked up to and rooted for and cheered for as a young sports writer. And you know, when you're still, it's like you feel like, all right, you're not really rooting for NHLers. You're still sort of objective, but we all put on our American hat, and those are my USA guys. But Bill Guerin was always one of my favorite players to interview, one of my favorite players to watch. And you look at the demeanor, the personality of this team, I don't think it's a coincidence that he's building a team. Yeah,
I think it's absolutely what he had in mind.
Took me 3 years. I finally figured it out.
Well, I mean, he made subtle comments about the way the game's supposed to be played, knowing what a locker room feels like, all of this kind of stuff. I mean, all of those little comments along the way, you knew that he had a vision in his mind of what he thought a contending team looked like, and he was going to build it.
And that's why he made the changes that he did, is he felt like Suter slowed the game down. He felt like Parisi, obviously, he just couldn't skate anymore. Koivu, the same thing. Stahl, the same thing. All the veterans that he got rid of, it wasn't just changing the old guard out. It was trying to make this team faster, more physical. Right.
And look, not everybody plays the game the way Ek, Foligno, Greenway play it. Yeah. You can't win with four lines like that, but you have to have a line like that. Yeah. And then you got to have another one that is the Duhaime Sturm Bukestad line, even though they haven't been great the last couple of games.
Yeah.
Over the course of the season, they've done that and give you another option of a line that with speed can defend even elite scoring teams. But then you got to have some skill. You have to have some guys who can change a game up front, and they have that.
Yeah. But even like I'm shocked that Ben and Merrill, like obviously Bill went out this summer to try to add some physicality and size to the back end. You know, Kulikov, Merrill, and Ben can all skate. Like, I'm shocked at how well Ben can skate. He can get up and down the ice. The guy...
He's looked better these last couple. The first couple games we saw him, I was worried. Exhibition games were not good. And that's why he wound up playing one out of the first, whatever it was, 18 games of the season. Yeah.
17 of 18 players, skaters on this team can skate. I always have to get one shot in, right? All right. Dead Doug asks, how does Benning leaving the Canucks affect a potential trade for JT Miller or Horvat? I think the fact that they don't have a GM right now and that it's an interim GM and Stan Smill, I think, probably means that they're not going to go and make a big time move. I don't know if he's going to have that. I think latitude by the owner. I think they're going to wait to see what they do as a GM. And the other thing is that now with Bruce Boudreau there, I think they're going to try to make the playoffs.
Well, right. I think the only way anything happens is if there's a major slide. Mm-hmm. I think right now, when you make those kind of moves, number one, you bring in a coach who is not going to be willing to say, yep, let's just trade everything, clear the cupboards and start over. He wants to win. And when you don't even know who the guy is that you're going to task with building your roster, you're not going to have an interim guy make a deal like that. Now, if they lose 10 games in a row and it's, hey, this ain't working. We might as well get what we can for these guys and move on. I mean, I don't have any inside information at all. Yeah. My guess would be unless they hire a GM on a permanent basis, there's no chance they make a deal like that.
Yeah. Although I will say Chicago surprised me. They have an interim GM there. And next thing you know, he's given the latitude to fire Colladen. Like, who knew that would be allowed? Here's a good question from Scott Forrester. Asks, why isn't Dumba deployed as a shooter on the top power play? Do you think it's because he misses the net? Or it just makes no sense to me that they don't try to have him tee up, from that left circle or anything?
I really think there's two things. One, I think what they view they need on that top power play group, because you play with four forwards, is a guy that's the main strength he has to have is just carrying the puck up the ice and getting it into the zone rather than being the shooter. And then I wonder if in the back of their mind they're thinking, number one, four forwards, I wouldn't mind having a guy who, if the dish hits the fan, we've got a little bit better defender up top there, whether it be Brodin or Spurgeon. And then number two is it makes the second power play group a little more explosive when you all of a sudden put two defensemen out there. Now you've got Dumba and Goligoski as a part of it. And we've seen that second power play group has actually had some success this year when they've had everybody healthy and you've got Hartman and Foligno both on that group. So I think when you throw Dumba and Goligoski together there, it creates an opportunity for that. I think it makes that group a little bit more offensive offensively explosive.
No doubt. I was so excited. I just texted Brandon, telling our producer, telling him that 53 minutes, there's a swear word, and it wasn't even me. So,
That's different. I think that...
I think it's allowed, but, you know, I think that we want to be a... You know, I think it will...
All right, here, Brandon, I'll give you a beep that you can use. Beep! Yep. You superimpose that if you want.
Yeah, exactly. Lane asked, will the Wild get a third jersey? That's supposed to be next year, but they actually might next year also have these, the North Stars type jersey back. I think all teams are going to potentially have
the reverse
variation.
Retros.
Yeah, reverse retro. Couple more questions, then we'll wrap up the show here. A couple good ones I saw. One is if the I mentioned on PA show today that if you close your roux. Let's go tackle Jack's question this way, Anthony. I feel like this team has the ability to do something special in the playoffs, but I do think they're a center away. And if you are Bill Guerin, knowing also you have all these kids coming, would you be willing to trade a first-round pick for a rental like Thomas Hertl or a Claude Giroux? Would you be willing to go make a Fiala for JT Miller move? If that, like, everybody worries about chemistry, but Marty Hanzel was the wrong guy. That was just a bad trade. Yeah. That was not a good move. But if you can add a center to this team, and you have Erickson Ek, and you have Sturm, and you have Hartman, and you put Hartman either with Kaprizov or with that other line, maybe it's Fiala, maybe Fiala is used to get the other player, but if you can add a top center, don't you think this team is one good center away from being special?
Well, I don't know if I'd say they're one center away from being special. I mean, to me, special is a team that is the favorite to win the cup.
Right.
I don't think they're going to be the favorite to win the cup. I think they play the way they play the game and the way they play together, I wouldn't want to have to play this team in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But I think those are two different things. And I think they're built for playoff hockey better than maybe Minnesota's ever been built. It all just depends on the guy. I mean, and I think right now I'd certainly be willing to deal some part of your future for a center with the way this team has played, because I think they've proven that they are that close. A number one, you know, maybe, and especially if you're looking at it saying, hey, look, our number one is going to be in the mid-20s anyway with where we sit in the standings. And I'd be more inclined perhaps to do that than deal a guy like a Fiala, unless you felt, and there's a setback right now with injury, unless you felt Matt Boldy was ready to step into that spot, which, you know, seems unlikely.
Well, that to me, I don't know. I think they want Boldy on this team. It's a shame he got hurt yesterday. He was so close to making his NHL debut.
That's what I mean. An injury set it back. Yeah. So if you, but, you know, I mean, I do think that you might just be an offensive player or player and a half away, because I think they feel defensively they're good enough to be there. One of the questions that jumped out to me was a guy had asked that, you know, we've heard this year about a change in culture and that the players have control of the locker room, and that the way he asked the question was that, you know, the big rip on Bruce Boudreau was that he let the players run the show. Isn't that a double standard? And, you know,
It's two different things.
And I think it's important to make sure that that's clear, is that Dean demands of the players what they have to do.
Yeah.
And then he trusts them. He just has said it a few times that I don't even feel like I have to go into the locker room because they're saying the same things we would say. And that's the difference.
Yeah.
Is that when the players were running the show, or the perception was that the players, you know, were the inmates were running the asylum, so to speak, under Bruce, was that they weren't playing the game the right way. They weren't saying the right things. They weren't echoing the sentiments of the coaches inside the room when the coaches weren't there. And Dean just laughs about it, or smiles about it, because he knows that he's got the right leadership in place, that he knows that if he walked in the room as a fly on the wall, Marcus Foligno would be saying the exact same thing he'd be saying, that Jared Spurgeon would be saying exactly the same thing he was saying on, guys, this isn't good enough. We can't do this. We've got to eliminate this.
And Dean's point is that it's just so much more impactful if Foligno's getting up and saying, like, what the hell, guys? Like, you know, that is just unacceptable, rather than Dean coming in and doing it every single night. And so, you know, and that's his point.
And
but the funny thing after the game the other night, after the bad second period, I asked Foligno, I'm like, so who fixed that one, Dean or you guys? And he's like, no, that one's for Dean.
Yeah. And Dean, I thought Dean's comments afterward were great, where he said, look, we just came in and said, that wasn't good enough. That wasn't us, but we're still even.
Yeah.
And I just think that's the way this team has handled those kind of things so much better than previous, the last couple of years, where they gave up, three in a row. But instead of letting three in a row turn into five or six in a row, they just righted the ship and played a great third period and ended up winning the game in a shootout.
So last question of the podcast, Jack asks, which arena has the crown for the actual worst seats in the house and which has the best? That's a good question. I'll let you go first as I go look at the standings to refresh my memory on arenas.
Well, the worst seat in the house in terms of broadcast position is right here in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. We are so far away here, it is ridiculous. And in fact, we're so far away that the home TV and radio guys don't even do the game from the press box anymore. They've moved down, which I've always felt is, if you've got a home crew that says their press box is so lousy that they can't do the games from there, you should be making that available to the visiting teams too. I just, if the visiting guy, if you're going to set up there, like at the XL Energy Center, where you know guys, some guys have, hey, we're sitting up there too. So this is the worst in terms of broadcast position, because we're about a mile away, and Edmonton's orange jerseys with blue numbers might be the most challenging to call from that distance.
Especially with one eye.
Yeah, with one eye. Although I'm hopefully on the road back. I'm thinking maybe tomorrow I'll be able to see again. And but it's, so that's probably the worst one. And the best one for me, there's a, it's pretty close, but Montreal is really good, and so is Calgary, because we've got those the catwalks that bring us
Calgary's
right
awesome.
Out, right
so
out
print
over
media
the arena.
Is a little different than so I'll give you my best and worst. You know, worst, one of the worst is Colorado now that we're in the corner, because that incredible owner decided to take half the press box and turn it into the biggest suite in history. I love Calgary. I just love the sight lines there. I mean, you're right on top of the ice. Edmonton's tough. I love Anaheim. I know it's tight, but great, we're close to the ice. Winnipeg for the beat writers, just awesome. I know you have a girder in front of you.
Girder issues there.
Nashville, it's not a real press box, and we are way now on the right side of the rink, so it's hard to see the other end. Great. San Jose was a makeshift press box, and now I'm convinced that one day I'm going to be up there and it's going to fall off the rafters, because now it shakes and it's tilted.
It doesn't make any sense.
Sarah McClellan and I were like, are we like rolling back on our, like, it, like we were
when we're separated by little like fake office cubicles from the other broadcast teams. But, you know, for us, we also, Seattle's we do good. Go down to the concourse for games in Dallas and LA. Yeah. They put us down at like suite level basically, which are outstanding.
Madison Square Garden is awesome. We're right. It's great sight lines, right on red line.
Yeah, we're pretty high up there, but I do like Madison Square Garden.
So there you go. That's another edition of Worst Seats in the House, December 15th, 7 p.m. at Elsie's. Hope everybody can come on out. And December 30th at Tuttle's at 7 p.m. But hope to see you at Elsie's, Northeast Minneapolis, huge parking lot on the northeast side of the river, right on the river. It's just a great, 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 great place. Well, Anthony, this was fun. Yep. I'm just trying to find the sponsors. Here we go. Thanks to Bosch Law Firm. Thanks to Aquarius Home Services. Thanks to Kowalski's. Thanks to Chris Lindahl Real Estate, TRIA, Profile by Sanford, and the Minnesota Propane Association. Thanks to Trampled by Turtles for playing us out. So much coming out, there's nothing going in. I know that you feel like you're never going to win. Oh, but the world. I was so excited. I just texted Brandon, telling our producer, telling him that 53 minutes, there's a swear word, and it wasn't even me.